Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
There's no place to escape to.
This is the last podcast.
On the left.
Right from your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Solid gold.
Looked like solid gold.
Okay.
Cost $1 million.
Marcus, are these things on?
These things are on, although we did not get all of the Ben is a tuba talk.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. Keep the tuba talk in there. Okay, for those that missed it before the mics were on, Henry said I was a tuba.
You are a tuba because you sound like farts, but you look like $1 million.
Look like $1 million, which seems like a very expensive tuba.
Yeah,
it can only if you buy a tuba for $1 million, you got ripped off.
Yeah. Some guy's walking down the street being like, can you believe I fucking hoisted that broken tuba on that tubeless moron? You know, and he's walking by, and then he gets hit by a truck.
Of course,
it's a bunch
naturally.
Of different scenarios you can play.
Can I
out.
Introduce the show, please? Okay, Marcus Parks is here. I am Ben Kissel, and we have hungover Henry Zabrowski.
Hey, you know, you kids go play quiet in the rumpus room so Dad can sleep on the Barca lounger for a little bit, all right? Daddy's having a bit of a headache because Mama won't let him party in the house.
Isn't that sad? So, of course, he's got to drive drunk home.
Yeah, you know how it is, but I'm good driving drunk because I'm confident.
That's
I'm
right.
I'm turning on my turn signals back and forth. You know where I'm going.
Just going straight, though, but turn
absolutely.
On the turn signals.
Just so they're afraid that I turn.
Yeah.
You know, because that's how my kids are always going to be afraid when Daddy turns.
Well, that's terrifying. All right. Well, let's go on to something more terrifying than Henry Zabrowski driving drunk with a car full of children. Richard Ramirez, part two, the heavy hitter. Marcus, where are we at? He just killed Maybell.
Yeah, he just killed
Maybell.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, Maybell sounds like a cow.
Well, Maybell doesn't sound that different than a cow.
They called her Maybell because her name was Mabel Bell.
Okay.
Oh, wow, that's really close.
Yeah. That is very close. I understand.
It's a clever name. I like it a lot. After Maybell.
It's not like, it's like.
Anyway, so let's just do a quick recap. Yeah. We have a Richard Ramirez, made to kill, 5 years old, hurt his head, 2 years old, hurt his head. His cousin Mike shot his wife in front of him.
Taught him how to be a super stealth murderer.
Super stealth.
He got into, he started sleeping in cemeteries.
Father was abusive.
Off to pictures of dead women.
Yep.
And now we're here. He's popped off a couple. But once you pop, the fun don't stop.
The fun does not stop except for the people that you're killing violently.
Brutally murdering.
Right.
Yeah. The next victims were Harold and Jean Wu.
Right. No, another Asian couple.
I mean, you are making a big deal out of the victims.
I am not making a big deal out of it. I'm simply saying that it is interesting that he doesn't seem to have it's a very diverse.
He has no demographic.
He's a diverse spree of kills here. Yeah. Right?
Absolutely, he's picking whoever. No, you just sounds like my mom. My mom's like, I'm not racist, but every single time she's like, oh, a new Applebee's is opening up. It's run by Orientals.
Well, that
and I was
would
like,
make
what
your
do you
mother
mean?
Race.
What does it matter that it's run by Asian people? First of all, they're Asians, not Orientals.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, it's fine.
It doesn't matter. What I'm just saying is your mother is racist. She was married to an NYPD officer for quite a number of years.
So what happened to the Woos?
Woos, of course, he broke in, shot the husband in the head as he is wont to do.
His MO.
His MO.
Because he's not a big guy. We were talking about this last time. He's your size. He's Marcus's size.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's why when you hear his ending,
they got to him. But it's like he needed to neutralize any sort of threat immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's a small fella. So, of course, he kills the man first, mm-hmm. the pop to the head. And this guy, was he also on the couch?
He was in the bed.
Okay,
he walked. A lot of times, he would do this sometimes where he would walk into the bedroom and just stand over them, just watching them for a long time. And then he'd pull out the gun, he'd shoot the husband in the head, and the wife would wake up. And of course, he'd go to town on her, as he did with Jean Woo, put her in the thumb screws.
He loved these thumb screws.
Because we said, again, it was used in military interrogation, and he learned how to torture and murder from his cousin who was a Vietnam vet.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he raped the 62-year-old woman.
Oh, no, she was 62.
She was 62, yeah. A lot of the, I would say the majority of the victims were older.
It was a lot of elderly people because it was all about power and control. And, like, this is a person, it's like, I could grab my grandma by the wrists and just, like, break her arms. You know,
I could clack
and make her a skeleton woman. Like,
I can see that.
Yeah, so you can't, it's just easy to hurt an old woman.
Do you think that as far as, you know, we were talking about when we did our great episode on black serial killers, we discussed the Grim Sleeper. And of course, when a prostitute goes missing, not a lot of cops go looking. But when a black prostitute goes missing, zero cops go looking. Yeah. Do you think that it helped him as far as staying under the radar, killing elderly people,
actually,
which we throw away in American society?
And elderly people are held to be super precious. That's just where...
in America, though.
No, the Night Stalker was heavily covered. Like, the story was heavily covered. The whole thing, people were outraged. He had total control of the city. When the Grim Sleeper was operating, nobody knew he was operating.
Right.
As soon as he started attacking it's children and old people, the most vulnerable members of society. When you attack them, you get the whole fucking city looking for you immediately.
Yeah.
That's why he got caught.
I mean, you know what? This reminds me of something. It's the Harlem Globetrotters. When they play the Washington Generals.
Harlem
Globetrotters know they're going to beat the Washington Generals every goddamn time because the fix is in.
It's in a script.
It's in the script. There's no way he could lose these battles. A 9-year-old, an 82-year-old, a 62-year-old. Guaranteed to win.
So you're saying Richard Ramirez is the Harlem Globetrotter.
Yes, I am.
And that
the fix is in.
The elderly and the children that he murdered are the bumbling Washington Generals. That are riding the pine, like, worst basketball players of all time.
That's correct, Henry. That's correct.
Let the record state.
Oh, this is not on the record.
That is what Ben said.
That is not on the record. That is simply recorded in podcast history forever, but it's not on the record. All right, so anyway, so he shot this guy in the head, now he's on to his wife.
He shoots the guy in the head, he rapes
him. God damn.
That is where we're at.
What is so unsettling about your performance in these last two Richard Ramirez, that there's something deeply unsettling about all this? I don't know what it is, but there's something's like making me feel kind of icky.
I look over at Kissel, and every once in a while he turns into like a macabre, like, circus. Like leader with a big top hat on and a sparkly jacket. He's like, yes, yes.
All right.
And then how did he rape her? See, the beautiful elephant woman.
All right. Well, don't talk about my wife like that.
So he rapes her, but he leaves her alive.
Oh. Because, again, he's switching it up back and forth. He switches up every single crime scene's a different... It seems like he plays it out however it is he's feeling, because he's such a chaotic killer. Because we talked about the two. There's two types of serial killers, chaotic and organized. He's obviously chaotic. It's about sexual rage. He goes in and he improvs, quote unquote, and then it's whatever the ending comes
just
out
yes
to be.
Ands
but there
himself.
Was no pentagrams in this murder.
No pentagrams, no.
So why did he keep her alive? Did he attempt to kill her and she just happened to live?
No, he just didn't try to kill her.
He just doesn't have to.
Yeah, he just doesn't have to.
Did he ever explain that in later interviews, why he would keep some of these people alive?
Yeah, he just said that legitimately, he said it's because you don't have to.
He's totally
in control. It's like he becomes God. And then it's like what Ted Bundy said, where it's like, I'm God of this universe. I'm your God right now.
I
pick and choose whether you're going to live or you're going to die.
Sure.
Yeah.
So it's almost like this is something
that
he will, like...
He showed mercy. He pats himself on the back.
Right.
And then comes out and then will tear the throat and eyes out of another woman.
So in a bizarre way, he's killed a man, he shot him in the head, he raped his wife, but he let her live, so he goes out feeling like a good person.
Like a good person.
Yeah, he's just like, I went to Catholic Mass, I'm doing okay.
It's like when I don't eat all my dumplings. It's like, I've got control.
That's right.
Yeah, it's like that. It's hard to make comparisons in the episode, you know?
It is. Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, we're never going to have the exact parallel situation happen in our lives, but I think the dumpling comparison, that's up there with it. Yeah.
Next victim, Ruth Wilson, 41. He breaks into her home, goes and finds her 12-year-old son, uses him as bait to let her show him exactly where all of the jewelry is, all of the valuables.
So now
valuables.
He's into thievery.
No,
which
he's
seems,
always
he
been
always
into
been. Oh, so he's always been stealing.
It's
from
also
the ashes.
Motivated. There was on the Richard Ramirez Born to Kill. This great officer was kind of talking about how like burglary. There's two types of burglary too, where it's just like a lot of it's like burglary's mostly like drug motivated. It's like you need money for X, Y, and Z, not just drugs, but you're like you need money, so you break in, you take stuff, you get out. And a lot of times people are in the house. You do what you have to do. If you got to tie him up, you tie him up. And if not, you get shit and you leave. But then there is something to the sexual nature of a burglary about invasion and looking through people's stuff. It's the ultimate voyeurism. You break into their lives. You are in a house and it becomes a sexual thrill. And that's why when we were talking last episode is how each scenario kept building and building and building as he was expanding his fantasy.
You know, it's so interesting that you say that. It reminds me of a story from college. There was a fellow named Anthony Schofield. All the girls loved him. He was a skateboarder. He was busted with 856 pairs of panties in his
but
grandmother's apartment.
But in like the 1950s,
apartment.
It was totally fine to do panty raids. Yeah, people would just break into women's like rooms and steal their underwear
and, steal their
and
panties,
wear them
yeah.
on their heads like a bunch of fucking, like they're in the Bilderberg group.
That's right.
You know,
which, of course, Alex Jones is yelling at them.
Put down. His foot
there's
down.
There's a great video there that perhaps we can post on the page, but yeah, so he had 856 pairs of panties, and that's what people kept on saying, like, innocent fun, you know, innocent fun.
That's not innocent fun, just stealing somebody's
and he would
panties.
And he would jack off on their pillows, but that reminded me of what you were saying there. He would go in, that is an ultimate high to be, you know, going through somebody's dirty laundry. Anyway, I get a friend from Dave, a phone call from
no,
a friend,
believe
Dave
me, the
Taylor.
Chinese people that take my laundry are hard for it.
Oh, yeah, they love it.
Love it.
Oh, they can't wait to sniff it.
Oh, my God, they're just like, I walk in there, and I'm like, it's like, are you wearing my underwear as a hat? And they're like, oh, thank you. You know, and like,
that's
I get
nice.
Money. Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, I'm sure that happens. But Dave called me, of course, and he's a great fan of the Roundtable, and he's made the Roundtable images.
Graphics. Oh, graphics. Yeah, he's an incredible graphic designer.
Anthony Schofield, anyway, he got picked up on Craigslist trying to fuck a 13-year-old.
Wow.
Of course, he went on Craigslist, was like, man, seeking 13-year-old, hey, let's meet up. And then somebody was like, meet me at this gas station. That person was with the
was
FBI.
A police officer.
Yeah, because no 13-year-old is like, yeah, disgusting
you
old
don't,
man.
You
I'd
don't
love to fuck
put it on Craigslist open out. It's like, that's ludicrous.
That's right. So this sort of, this is part of the escalation for Ramirez.
Well, now, what did he do? Because this 12-year-old, he like put him in another room,
put
right?
Him in a closet.
And raped his mother, right?
Yeah. Put him in a room. And
but
he does
nothing
this,
to the kid.
Did nothing to the kid. And he does the exact same thing with his next victim, Carol Kyle.
Did he kill the woman?
He did not kill the
so
woman.
So this is just, so we have double rapes in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep, and the next one, Carol Kyle, she described him as good looking, and said that he smelled like wet leather.
What?
This woman has strange taste in men. Can we agree
like
with that?
Wet leather?
I never smelled wet leather. I don't want to.
Sounds like cowboy erotica. Saying, and then an old Jeb rolled over, smelling like wet leather and smoking papers, and he took off that big shiny belt buckle and took out that cow knuckle of his.
Oh,
and
that's
I
great.
Went to town on it, and I never knew a better day of being sheriff.
Oh, that is hot, hot erotica.
Gay sheriff porn.
I love it. Yeah. Ladies just listening to it on an iPod while they ride the horse around town. Seems like Susan's coming all over the top of that horse. 50 Shades of Hot Leather.
So what's next? I had a question. What are the time periods between these incidents?
They start getting closer and closer.
Yeah, so it's about a week in between each
it's
one,
It's starting
right?
to get a week in between a couple. Well, sometime about 2 to 3 weeks in between.
And previously it was about a month span or so?
Yeah, between the first and second, it was 8 months.
It was eight months.
And then it's like all these guys, it just keeps...
This is a typical rage mode.
He's starting to slide into what we see with Dahmer, and I'll say where he becomes, he's totally raging. Raging out, he's going on a fucking. Yeah,
it's like so. After you break up with your girlfriend who you had for 5 years, you have sex with one girl, and then like 9 months later, you have sex with another girl. But then you start to hit your stride, and you fuck all the pussy.
Are you talking about yourself?
I don't know. It doesn't matter, but it seems similar.
It's at this point in which Richard Ramirez, like many other serial killers, almost gets caught. But okay. through the bumbling of the LAPD, goes away scot-free. He was having a real bad night. First, he tries breaking into a house, but sees that the man is awake and is cleaning a gun. So he gets away from there.
Yes.
He decides he's just going to kidnap a girl out in Eagle Rock. She starts screaming. Someone calls the police. He has to run away from there. Then he runs a red light. Remember, Richard Ramirez always drove stolen cars.
Yeah.
He was a big car thief.
Yeah, he loves stealing cars. Everything. Because also, like, it was a part of his evasion technique is that you never knew what car he was driving.
Yeah.
Like, he drove, like, during this whole process, he drove, like, five or six different cars.
Yeah. And the cop, despite hearing just a few moments earlier, the description of the suspect that had tried to kidnap the little girl, and despite the fact that Richard Ramirez was driving a stolen car, just didn't put the two events together. And in fact, the cop asked him, "Hey, you're not the guy killing people in their homes, are you?"
Oh my God!
What a funny, what a funny joke!
And Richard Ramirez says, "No way, man. When you guys gonna catch that motherfucker anyway?"
Yeah. God damn!
Oh, so classic. I went to that cop marry Courtney Cox because he sounds like David Arquette from Scream. He is a Deputy Dewey if I've ever heard of a goddamn Deputy Dewey. Yeah, I'm sure you're not that guy that we should be looking for.
Not at all, you know. And he's like, takes it out. He says, "So you just need to want to sign this ticket here?" And he like takes a knife covered in blood and signs it like he's fucking Vincent Price.
That is
like,
funny.
Oh, that's a funny souvenir and pen you got there. Where'd you get that from? Some kind of museum and a macabre? And he's like, no, I killed a woman with it.
Now, this has been one of my favorite traffic stops I've ever had. I'm
this
laughing.
Car's not even yours, is it? No way, no, man. It's not even remotely my car. It's like, you're hilarious. Get out of here. If I could just meet nine of you a day, my job would be a lot easier, Mr. Your name is Mr. Kyoto? This is this ID. This is an old ID. Is this from 1965?
As the cop goes
that
back.
That movie Gone in 60 Seconds would have been much better if it was based on Richard Ramirez.
I mean, it would have been a lot. It would have gotten a hard R rating.
Definitely. That's for double sure. R for Richard Ramirez.
My sister is the best gift giver I've ever met of any person. It's Jackie Zabrowski. She shops all year, thinking about her family and friends, and puts little things aside for their birthdays and Christmases. I have no idea how she does it. I don't know how she do it. But guess what? She always wins Mother's Day, but not this year. I'm coming back. Ready to win Mother's Day and cement your reputation as the best gift giver in the family? I'm taking the crown. All right, give the moms in your life an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos. I mean this. We have the Aura frame up in my home. We absolutely love it. I can put photos on it very, very easily through the app. It's fun to do. And the memories keep cycling and I get emotional. And we filled it with pictures of Carmi and Wendy. And that is not sad. That is celebratory. So you should try it. It's honestly a really good product. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code LEFT at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Finding work-life balance can be tough, but Squarespace gives you the tools to reach your goals and have time to celebrate. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. With the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint, you can select from curated layout and styling options to create a personalized website optimized for every device. Get your website discovered fast with integrated, optimized SEO tools. Plus, make checkout easy for customers with easy-to-use payment tools. And with Squarespace AI, you can explain what your site is about, choose your tone, enter what you need, and get auto-generated text. And that helps you save time. I know I'm sitting on about two literal wheelbarrows filled with horse pics. Now, part of the issue has been is a lot of these pictures are getting stopped at customs because some of them do depict various world leaders in horse-like circumstances that seems to be pinging a lot of these custom agents' accounts. Now, so what I've done to do is like, so while I'm trying to work on hand smuggling these horse pics over various country borders, I then also have time because Squarespace is doing all the other ad work for me to go and work on my killdozer at home. So thank you, Squarespace, for allowing me to diversify in the best way possible for this country. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial when you're ready to launch. Go to squarespace.com/left to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Ah, Jules. Oh, Jules. Make a wife smile today. The road to getting engaged can be long and full of memories and pitfalls and landmines. Or it can be short and thrilling, like a roller coaster on the way to the police department. But the road to finding the perfect engagement ring is a straightforward path every time. All you've got to do is head over to BlueNile.com, and they're going to ship them rocks straight to your wife's new fingers. On BlueNile.com, you can create a bigger, more brilliant piece than you can imagine. At a price you won't find at a traditional jeweler, Blue Nile is the original online jeweler since 1999. That's present time to me. Their diamond price guarantee means that in most cases, they can meet or beat a competitor's price on a comparable diamond. I know when I got my wife a beautiful Blue Nile necklace, the first thing she did was, "What did you do?" But afterwards, she was so happy to have it, and she loved it, and she wore it when we went on vacation, and Maron, did everybody come around being like, "Where'd you get that piece, you beautiful woman?" And I was like, "Stop talking to my wife. She's spoken for. You can see it with the Blue Nile bling she's got on her." Right now, get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more with code LASTPODCAST at BlueNile.com. That's $50 off with code LASTPODCAST at BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
So the cop goes back to his motorcycle to call it in. Richard Ramirez gets out of the car, and the cop doesn't notice this either, that Richard gets out, draws a pentagram on the hood of the car, and scampers off into the night.
This is a real story.
This is a real story, yeah.
And this officer, does he still work in the LAPD? Is he Christopher Dorner? I mean, who the fuck is this idiot? How do you have a job?
Can you imagine, though, you could see how it feeds into his idea that Satan is really helping him now. Talk about this, it's like he believes that black magic is making him invisible.
Yeah.
Like he's, because right. he keeps incorporating, because now we see more and more satanic imagery come into each one of these killings. Mm-hmm. He obviously thinks he's being protected.
What do you think about his Satanism and as far as his religion goes?
I think it's totally, it's an elemental Satanism. It's a primitive Satanism. It's like, it's not like I'm going to wear pewter rings and meet girls at a party Satanism. It's like he believes that he is a demon and he is doing demon's work. It's like fucking House of a Thousand Corpses.
Yeah.
So do you think, I mean, Richard Ramirez, I mean, we're reading the Damien Eccles book, mm-hmm. of course, from the West Memphis Three. And, you know, he was basically convicted because people had this insane idea of Satanism. And he wasn't even a Satanist. He just liked to research things and learn. But do you think that Richard Ramirez's version of Satanism was the one that was sort of the overall narrative that America took as far as to represent everyone who was a secular humanist? I mean, we interviewed Shane Morton, of course.
Absolutely. That was where the idea of devil worshiper came from. They say devil worshippers do this, this, and that. But actually, it's, you know, Satanism is just essentially, it's a term for secular humanism or atheism. That's all it is. It's a funnier thing to do than say you're an atheist. You know?
Right. No one likes to hear an atheist talk.
Atheists suck. You know, it's like, but it's Satanism is fun. This is a guy that was like, the thing that pops in my head, it's like, someone like Vlad Dracul, like the guy that Dracula was based off of. Like this is a different bloodline. This is a different strain of thought. This is, I'm literally doing things for what I believe is a higher, I believe I'm moving with spiritual energy doing the things that I'm doing.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a witch. It's old timey. It's like,
so
super
he's taking the superstitions of the culture and just like putting them into actual practice.
Yeah. Cause it makes it so much scarier. It's like what Batman did, dressing up like Batman. It makes you so much scarier to draw a pentagram on something.
And you can imagine how much scarier Batman would have been if he had Down syndrome.
See, this
imagine where's that dark
side. Someone shouldn't have given that retarded man that grappling hook.
Very interesting, because you only see the
fucking
mouth
smashing through hotel signs. Like,
oh my. That would be an interesting comic. That'll have to get made. So he drew the pentagram. The cop just drove on and went about his business harassing black kids or something.
Yep, and he returns to murder just a couple days later with Patty Higgins. He slits her throat. In another stalker attack, he goes into the house of Mary Cannon. He took the widowed grandmother. She was 75 years old. He beat her unconscious with a lamp and then stabbed her with a 10-inch butter knife.
A butter knife. That's by definition not to go. That's not supposed to go through meat.
No, it's supposed to go through soft things like butter.
How hard do you have to stab somebody to go
like in, real hard?
Real hard, exceptionally like hard,
very hard.
Yeah, Avia you have to, like, sneakers.
Really,
only
want
with
it.
Your Avia sneakers can you stab a woman with a butter knife.
And speaking of Avia sneakers, one of his next victims, Joyce Nelson, stomped her to death with his Avia sneakers, and the sneaker print that he left was one of the things that helped them connect that crime to the overall
on her face. The print was on her face.
You see, this is so he is getting more and more brutal. The timing between each one is now days, right? Like it's like days go by. It's like it's no longer weeks. He's having no cool down periods. Mm-mm. He's just fucking barreling through.
And what
is this before? And these are also all in different neighborhoods of LA.
Yeah, one was in Arcadia, one was in Sierra Madre. All of his murders in Los Angeles happened within a 40-mile radius.
But that's a pretty big radius, though, isn't it?
Yeah, because that's what they realized. The thing is, like, for a while, I believe one of his names also, they called him the freeway killer or something. Because they were talking about how, like, LA becomes this perfect place to be a fucking mass killer because you got the highway system. It's right there. And you just pop on the highway, you zip, and you're in a fucking, you're on the other side of the city. And then you go back and forth. You could be in 10 different places at once if there's no traffic.
Yeah.
And God forbid you get that 405 at 5 o'clock.
You imagine, I would love to see Richard Ramirez upset in traffic, be like, I gotta kill that old woman, and this motherfucking traffic jam is fucking with my plans.
Yeah, this guy would have been
I knew I should have taken the 101.
So dumb, Richie.
Sometimes
I feel like Richie could have been like a great poster boy for Google Maps.
Absolutely.
And their like traffic app, you know. And it's just like, I know when I gotta kill a 7-year-old in Glendale, but I gotta be back and to kill a 9-year-old over in Skid Row. I'm watching my Google Maps traffic app.
Wearing my Avia shoes. How many kills? I feel like we've burned through so many. Where are we at now? Are we at 11 or 10?
I think we're somewhere around 7 or 8.
Yeah.
Eight or 9, somewhere. I haven't been keeping track exactly because it does all kind of blur
together. Yeah, because it blends together. Is this when he left town for the first time when he goes up to San Francisco?
Not yet.
Okay.
No,
just to stop you, what was the media like here at this time?
Nuts.
They knew that he was the Night Stalker.
He wasn't called the Night Stalker.
He wasn't,
yet.
Okay.
No, he wasn't called the Night Stalker.
So he wasn't officially branded yet.
No, well, they had other names for him. They had the Walk-In Killer, the Valley
Intruder.
Screen
Door Intruder,
the worst name ever.
Yeah.
Okay, so there was a lot of buzz about him right now.
Oh, yeah. People all over Los Angeles, like, gun sales shot up. People had axes next to their beds.
And they were saying
tire irons.
It was an incredibly hot summer.
Yeah.
That's right.
But everyone would keep their windows shut, so all of L.A. was shut down for the summer. Kind of what happened during the zebra killings, where it was like everyone stopped going places. The city was fucked. People were staying inside. And guard dogs was like this crazy huge run on guard dogs being sold as well.
Which of course led to the Michael Vick dog fighting ring. A lot of pit bulls. I'm serious. I'm dead serious. I mean, you know, for all intents and purposes.
I mean, this is a long time
ago. A lot of pit bulls
ago.
Were bought for home protection.
Yeah, but
then,
I think they were tortured to death by football players. You know, like not
one
all
football
of them.
Player.
No, a bunch of them. Him and his boys all tortured dogs to death.
And the comedy rolls on. Everyone knows what's going on in the neighborhood. And he's a chilling effect. It's very Summer of Sam-esque. People are changing their behaviors. Continue on.
Yeah. June 27th, Patty Higgins. July 2nd, Mary Cannon. July 5th, Whitney Bennett, a 16-year-old girl. He breaks into the house. He doesn't...
This is a fucked up story.
Did you say 16?
16.
Set this up. And so that night, the parents were asleep. The parents were home asleep when he breaks into the house and sees her sleeping. And he wakes her up by hitting her in the head with a tire iron. And then he rapes her and then leaves.
Now, the old Texas alarm clock, huh? That's when you hit somebody. Texas alarm clock. It's when you hit somebody in the head with a tire iron to wake them up to milk the goddamn cows. Well, I'm not making this up. Why am I being demonized? I'm not making this up.
That's a reality. That's the reality.
True. No, sure. No, you can call it anything you want.
Yeah, of course. I grew up in Texas. That's
and you understand it.
I got woken up every morning.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Marcus.
Your dad would come and hit you with a tire iron, rape you, leave you in a pile of blood, and then you'd go shuck the chickens and fucking feed the pigeons.
My dad used to wake me up by singing to me. Good morning. Good morning.
That's so sweet. That's you see, very the opposite sweet. Of how yeah. she was woken up.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
okay,
that's the
I'm
true
sorry.
Texas alarm clock. We're a very kind people, Ben.
Well, I think that this woman got off easy compared to how you had to live. That sounds awful. Mr. Park singing good morning with a rock card morning bone. You never know.
I know. Yeah, you do know.
Okay.
You do
all
know.
Right. So he hit a chicken head with a tire iron.
She had to get 478 stitches lock up the lacerations.
Yeah, yeah, and she didn't remember any of those cheerleading formations anymore either.
It's very difficult.
No.
But so he killed the first two before that you mentioned that you just burned through. He killed them, right?
Yeah, he killed Patty Higgins, and Perry Cannon, Whitney Bennett. He did not kill.
So he killed these two gals, and then he went to rape another one, but he did not kill her.
No, he didn't kill her.
He just attacked her while her parents were asleep in the other room.
And then she was able to give. I mean, so she knew what he looked like. Again, going back to your previous statement on the first episode about it, if he would have just worn a mask, he mm-hmm. would have gotten away with it for years.
Yeah, he really would have. I mean,
and
what
kind of ego does that have? What kind of ego do you have to have?
He just didn't care.
He just didn't care.
Just didn't care.
That's why I really believe he. He believed he was fueled by satanic magic. I think mm-hmm. This is the real. We were talking about this, like.
He felt like Frodo putting the ring on in Lord of the Rings. Yeah, he felt invisible that.
We were talking about, like, how. There's another bad analogy. How, like, BTK was like a dude. BTK was like a corporate serial killer. Like, he did everything right.
Yes, he did.
And he did the thing to make everybody scared, but he kind of never really had that. He was always kind of fake. He was doing it a little too on purpose. He was trying too hard.
He was putty.
Richard Ramirez is like Zeppelin. Like, he's like he's like the real deal. Like, you show up and you see
he's the difference between Bill Hicks and Dennis Leary.
Yes.
Dennis Leary, you know, Too Cool for Cancer, whatever that fucking bullshit special was just a ripoff of Bill Hicks' legitimate
Richard
death
Ramirez
from cancer.
Was fucking evil incarnate. Yeah. Like, he was an unstoppable force for a while, and he is a fucking monster, and he got to die of natural causes in jail.
54 years old. Yeah. All right.
He did. Lymphoma. So,
and it takes him all. I was actually just at the bar here at the Creek in the Cave discussing how he needs to be the spokesperson for cancer research.
Yeah.
We gotta stamp out lymphoma. Just have a picture of Ramirez and you just see the profits plummet. No one cares anymore because apparently cancer kills some people that need to die.
Yeah.
He was always going to die.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll get to his appeals process later. But his next break-in is one of his most brutal. This one is fucking awful. It's this Vietnamese couple, Chainarong Covenanth and Somkin Covenanth.
Right. These are hard names.
No, but I think Marcus nailed it.
Yeah,
sure. That was
Covenanth.
I feel like you could say anything, and I have to say yes because I don't understand. I don't understand how they pronounce their names.
Yeah.
So he killed the husband right off.
Of course.
Yeah, he used a 25 caliber handgun. He used four different kinds of handguns during all this. 25
I mean,
caliber,
he used
22.
Everything.
Yeah.
When he killed those girls that you just sort of brushed over, did he shoot them with a gun as well?
I believe he stabbed one and shot the other.
Okay.
Yeah,
he was mixing it up constantly.
Yeah, all over the place. So he shoots the husband, he takes the wife, he rapes her, he finds the couple's 8-year-old son and rapes him with a bottle of baby oil.
Yeah.
Whoa,
so
what happened now?
This is also this is the killing where
what happened?
No, but I mean he's never done anything with a child, especially of a boy.
Technically
I mean the
did.
Girl, no, the 9-year-old girl,
oh,
yes.
Yeah,
but I mean this is an 8-year-old boy. I mean
it's about how evil you can be. Because this was the one where he made her scream Hail Satan.
Well, the one before this, actually, Sophie Dickman, that was the first one, at least that we know of, that he started saying, swear to Satan, swear to Satan.
Yeah, like tying him up and being like, say Hail Satan or I'll kill you. Hail Satan.
I mean, either way, I'm going to kill you.
Satan. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and while he raped the kid with the baby oil.
I'm sure he's fine now.
Oh, he loves it. I mean, hates baby oil. Hates baby oil.
Yeah.
But.
And so this is what the wife said that Richard Ramirez said.
Can't even walk through the bathroom aisle of the CVS.
Any sort of oil-related things. You know, that's just a tragedy.
Tanking a massage.
Oh, yeah.
God.
Anyway.
Here's the dialogue from what this is from the witness statement from the wife. And where's the money? No money, no money. I swear to God. No, swear to Satan. And then he raped her again and left.
Yeah.
She said, this is her statement about Richard Ramirez. This is fucking chilling. She said, he is dangerous beyond words. So brutal, so mean, so cruel. His eyes were like an animal's, not human.
Did she mention his hair? That's, you know, wonderful
beautiful hair,
hair
though.
Yeah. But she had to, because this is the first time that they really start putting together a composite of Richard Ramirez.
And how is it taking this long?
Because because the different counties don't talk. They don't communicate.
Right. Yeah.
So like they're letting the crime is spreading everywhere, and everyone's claiming each section of the killers to themselves and be like, this is our Night Stalker murder. That's yours. And it's like eventually like they
it's
have
just
to
so
be
funny.
Like, well,
it's almost
it.
Like putting together Frankenstein's monster. Yeah. They're like, I got the leg piece and you got the arm piece, but like no one gets together and actually makes the beast.
Well, there was one guy who tried to bring it all together, and in fact, this is the same guy that caught Gary Ridgway, and the reason why Gary Ridgway was able to operate for so long was because of that exact same LAPD not being able to work together.
What a corrupt bunch of motherfuckers.
It's so ridiculously
LAPD
dumb.
LAPD is just filled with the worst like, when Dorner popped off, I read his manifesto, and I was like, I kind of get why you're fucking mad, dude. Like, and I understand.
For those that don't know, Christopher Dorno, it was, what was that, about a year and a half ago?
Yeah, we covered it in the last podcast. Yeah.
Google that story, Christopher Dorner. Very interesting. So the LAPD is just messing up and completely validating Ramirez's belief that he's above the law and can get away with anything.
Mm-hmm. That is until Frank Salerno comes
this
along.
This guy's a fucking hero.
Okay.
This guy is like the real
super
deal.
Cop.
Super cop. He tirelessly works. There's a story we'll get to when we one of these later murders that just shows it's like these crimes were always on his mind. He did everything in his power, and when you watch interviews with him, he took it so fucking personally. Like even just him talking about being with his daughter would like look at him and be like, daddy, when are you gonna catch the bad man? And it's like, and as he was like talking about that, like tears are streaming down his face because he's like, he's just the real deal.
Is it on par with the detective from the Jeffrey Dahmer files? Is it on par with that?
That guy was more of a, he got the case flopped on his lap.
Yeah.
Right.
This was a guy who had to go and pick up all the different strands and tie them all together.
And so
Dahmer was just the fucking septic tank ran out. And they were like, oh my God, this thing is in a lot of, you know, like someone calls the police. And then all of a sudden you're the guy who cracked the Jeffrey Dahmer case because you have to go like sweep up humans' fingers for fucking 5 days.
It turns out the pervert did it. You know,
they said he seemed pretty nice when we got him in the office there, but, you know, he had some fingernails stuck in his mustache here.
Yeah, wouldn't you believe it? And if you're a cop or if you're a detective out there, just a little quick piece of advice. It's always the white guy in the all-black apartment building. You know, it just always is. There's no doubt about it. That white guy is hiding from something.
Yeah.
So yes, Frank Salerno, we'll get more into his involvement as we go on.
Yes.
But he is an absolute super cop. He's the guy that first starts putting together the footprints.
Yeah.
He starts putting together the pentagram stuff. He goes to certain cult halls in Los Angeles and does, in fact, find the same footprint in one of the cult halls is what they call
them. Is it like
the
Skid Row type thing?
Kind of, yeah, one of them was in East L.A.
But you said he started putting it together and like being like, they had a vague description of him, and then you'd start going down to Skid Row and asking people, because Richard Ramirez was such a drug addict, all the addicts knew him, and they're all like, oh, you mean the really scary dude with the piercing black eyes who barely says anything and he's being wickedly addicted to cocaine? Oh,
that's
you mean
one.
Richie.
Richie, yeah.
The next murder is...
So this detective, Frank, so he got a name at this point.
What?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet.
But no, he's just started putting the pieces. People had said they'd seen this dude.
Right.
They kind of knew who the dude was. They knew who they were looking for. They were looking for a rangy dude with
kinda
long black hair, like Spanish guy. They knew that they were kind of looking for that, but that's half of L.A.
Yeah, I mean, you just described downtown Antonio Banderas, a very attractive man.
The next murders, this would be Max and Leela Needing. He switches it up again. He brings his own machete this time.
BYOM, huh?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because that's the thing. It's at this point, it's like he's slowly turning to the guy who brings his own pool cue to the billiards pit.
Which is, how, by the way, there is nothing sadder than watching somebody think he's being super cool by bringing his own billiard pool to his own stick.
Anybody down for a game of round table ball? That's what I call pool.
Everybody I'm not going to play with you because you're taking this very seriously. I'm drunk off my ass, you know, because I'm here to watch football.
Anybody want to play some pinochle?
You are hammered, and you've somehow screwed that in backwards.
So he brings a machete to this kneading house.
Hacks these people up in their beds, and then just shoots them both in the head and leaves.
Yeah. Okay. So,
just straight,
murder. And no sexual assault in this
one. Yeah, no sexual assault. He just cuts them up, shoots them in the head, robs the house, and then goes back and cuts them up some more.
Is the only theme here robbery?
It's always
breaking and entering, but is it always robbery as well?
Not always.
I mean, he's taking something from everybody.
One of the people that eventually, when they were closing the net in on him, they talked to his fence, and they were able to match a lot of the stolen objects that Richard Ramirez had sold to this guy with the missing objects from the people's houses.
Yeah, because he's still got to pay his rent. He's still got to pay his utilities, and he's still probably renting movies and doing stuff once in a while. You know, you gotta have some fucking pocket cash.
It must be weird for a landlord to get paid in blood-covered diamonds or blood-covered necklaces and shit like that, you know?
Just a woman's scalp.
Is
this money? Hmm. No, Ricky, you need the money.
Everyone's so scared of him, you know?
Next up, these are the only people that were able to fight back and succeed. Chris and Virginia Peterson, 36 and 27.
Really young because they're young.
Yeah, because they're young.
Yeah.
He shoots both of them. He shoots the woman in the face. He shoots the guy in the temple. They were still able to fight him off, and he got the fuck out of there. As soon as they started fighting back, did they live? They both lived, yeah.
They were able
to give like a very good description of him, so the description is getting more, and the composite sketch is getting more and more detailed.
I just feel like, why isn't this like cut and dry overnight, you catch this dude?
Because
they didn't know who he was.
Los Angeles,
everyone is giving the same description. Beautiful hair, Ben, Hispanic man with terrible breath.
Los Angeles is massive. It is a massive spread out city. There's so many people. It's like, honestly, it's like New York. As soon as, like, my dad, they talk about it in the show 48 Hours, where it's just like, especially in a place like New York, like, in the suburbs, in the country, like, someone will be like, yeah, I saw him over there. Like, someone will, like, they know when, like, if there's sparse people, you can, like, go someplace. You're noticeable when you're traveling. In New York City, you just get on the subway.
Unless
you
you're 6 foot seven with red hair.
Myself.
Yeah,
which is why you'd have to dress up like a fucking leprechaun in order to be the Leprechaun Massacre Man.
Oh, that would be amazing. The Leprechaun Massacre Man. Yeah, so he just blended in with society in LA. Okay.
Yeah. The next one up, Elias Abawath. He, of course, made her swear to Satan throughout the entire rape. Swear to Satan. This is the first time after this one he is finally dubbed the Night Stalker.
Yeah, and it's like, and finally. I feel like that's what he, you know, it's that fucked up thing of like when Peyton finally got the ring.
Peyton Manning finally got the
validation that he wanted.
Validates his legacy. So now he has everything he's ever wanted. He's gone on every crime spree, which is probably why
he knows it's just a matter of time before he's caught. All these guys know it's just a matter of time before they're caught.
Yeah.
So well, you
I mean,
just
it seems
play it
to
out.
Me like he is living in a complete fantasy world where he assumes that he will never be caught.
I mean, he hopes probably because he's having too much fun.
Mm-hmm. He's having a great time. You know, I mean, he does seem to be legitimately having a good time. Dahmer did not have a good time.
No, Dahmer was tortured.
Gary Ridgway, going back to the Green River Killer, who has to, I would suggest him for the next big hitter.
Yeah.
He's amazing. I don't think that he had a wonderful time. I don't think BTK had a great time.
No, BTK actually did have a good time. Yeah.
He was just being punny, but he was also just too much of a dickhead to have a good time. Yeah, that's
like
true.
Like, he couldn't enjoy himself even when he was doing what he loved.
That's sad. Isn't that... You know, if you can't enjoy doing what you love, even doing what you love,
and
breaking
happy,
into the Otero
you
know? House and killing a family, then...
Coming all over the daughter. If you can't enjoy yourself,
it ain't
living
right.
your life like you want to live it, I mean, I don't know, you know? I feel bad for those people.
I'll tell you, you know...
I feel bad for them.
I used to think this was a horror comedy podcast, but now I know it's an inspirational podcast, and that's what's so important. If you
do you, man.
Do
YOLO.
You. You only kill once, something like that, or 13, 14, 16, 17 times.
It's at this point when he's given the name Night Stalker.
He's happy.
Salerno calls a press conference and really says, like, all right, there's this guy. He's killed 10 people. No, he's killed 12 people at this point, 11 or 12. We can link all these murders to him. Lock your fucking doors. Buy a weapon.
That's where Frank Slater finally came out and he, like, put it, basically, because that's what you have to finally do. At this point, they know that there's a killer problem and there's a thing coming on, but I know there was definitely talk of that maybe it was a group of people, because what Frank Salerno was saying, the big thing is that everyone was fighting him, being like, there's no way this is one dude.
Yeah.
Everyone, all the police officers,
they
were
convinced, would laugh at him.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it makes a lot of sense. He's doing everything a little bit different
each
time.
He's crazy. And he's also flagrant and crazy and brazen. He's nuts. And so it's just, like, so finally he's like, no, it's one guy. We're going to find the one dude.
Yeah.
And he put all the evidence together, and then that press conference is terrifying.
Was this before or after Manson? Was Manson before?
This is way after.
Way after Manson, right? So we're talking late 70s, 80s here,
right? This was 25 years. This is 1985.
This is 85. 85. Okay. So maybe that played into the notion that it must have been multiple people, a cult-like situation.
The satanic imagery, all the pentagrams, does point to some sort of cult involvement.
They think.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy was trying anything. But at this point, they put out a whole shitload. Every single wall in Los Angeles was covered with
this description, this sketch
of Richard Ramirez.
And how accurate was the sketch? Because I'll tell you, remember, there was a situation here in New York City where there was a man going around killing people in the delis. And remember, they dubbed him the duffel bag killer.
Yeah,
and
John Doe duffel bag.
John Doe duffel bag. And the sketch they had of him looked like Jay-Z, and the man was an Italian with a mustache and a huge nose with a receding hairline.
Well, no one wants to believe that Mario is going to be committing these horrible crimes.
Exactly. I mean, was the sketch mildly accurate at least?
If we're going to post this up on the page, apparently Lou Reed killed
He looks exactly like Lou Reed. Somebody was just listening to a Lou Reed album.
But actually, that kind of worked, because it's the eyes. It's the penetrating eyes, his fucking wavy, beautiful hair.
It's not as bad as the Joe Duffel bag character.
It's not as bad, but that's the and he's much older in the picture than Richard Ramirez actually was. Richard Ramirez 25 when all this was going on.
Oh man, what have I done with my life, huh? 32 years old.
We haven't murdered anybody, so
let's call that a plus.
Oh, that's good.
That's a positive. All that's something you can put in your win column.
Thank you, Marcus.
Yeah. You're welcome.
I really
Ben.
Appreciate that. Rarely
never succumbed to my demons.
All right, so Night Stalker is bored. Night Stalker is out there.
Night Stalker is out there, and since L.A. is in such a panic, he has to leave town because he's not going to stop killing, but he is smart enough to know that he can't do it in Los Angeles anymore.
Sure.
He drives up to San Francisco.
Get a Frisco Bay, baby. You got to go there and the girls. It's a beautiful town. Go down to Haight-Ashbury, man. Drop some acid. Learn about yourself.
Look at the walruses. There's a lot of walruses there. Seals.
What?
They're seals.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, fun fact.
Yeah, great. Yeah, the seals are awesome. They hang out around Alcatraz. You ever been to San Francisco?
Alcatraz? If I was a prisoner, I'd be like, we got to start riding some of these seals. Hey, you guys, look right at their window. They got horses out in the ocean right there when we need them. All we got to do is stab a pencil in their neck, and we hold it like it's two holsters.
That's a good idea.
I'll get us out of Alcatraz.
And that was the most retarded prisoner.
Floating dead and fucking being played with my dead body tossed back and forth by seals.
I do like the imagery. I do like that.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It says here I have to talk about something I need to get off my chest, and I guess I can share it here. I eat mayonnaise for fun. It's a hobby of mine, and it's an addiction. And it's a daily weight on my life. How much I need whipped egg whites and oil crammed into my veins as soon as I wake up. And a lot of people carry around a lot of different stressors, big and small. Some people are presidents. Some people are soldiers. Some people have to eat mayonnaise, especially with hard-boiled eggs, which is what I eat for lunch. But I guess I should share that in therapy, because therapy is a safe place to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. And what I do is I just add eggs if I have mayonnaise left over. I just continue to add the eggs. But if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. I hope they can help me. My God. I hope they can help me. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/lastpod today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lastpod. No matter what kind of work you do, how you communicate is key. All those emails, reports, and presentations are equally important to the collaboration needed to get things done. And Grammarly can help. Grammarly is your AI writing partner to help you communicate more effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact at work. And isn't that what matters most? Better writing means a stronger impact. Grammarly works across 500,000 apps and websites. You can't escape it. Like the ever-pervasive octopus of malice that is the NSA. Grammarly is watching your every move, making sure that you're doing it right. Data privacy and security are woven into the foundation of Grammarly, into the very essence of its nature. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner, and it helps your team make their point and move faster, because that's the key there. Work smarter, not harder. Yes, Grammarly. You know how many times it saves me from writing a long, rambling, one-sentence email at 4 o'clock in the morning to my beloved employees? Makes me sound like someone who doesn't just have a BA in theater. All right, I was taught how to be a tree. I was not taught how to survive as an adult. All right, my job was to cry in front of a weird Southern man who just told me all sorts of weird stuff about my body. I didn't learn how to write. So thank you, Grammarly, because you're making me the boss I gotta be to motivate my team to get out there. And, oh, man, you don't want to mess with them. Thanks, Grammarly. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Hey! Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. That's one of my favorite things about it. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. Now, personally, I'm in the middle of re-landscaping my yard. I like to do it myself because I called up a landscaper to see how much it costs, and it was absolutely insane. Plus, I love dirt. I love getting my hands in the dirt, and I love planting things myself. And Fast Growing Trees has given me some wonderful plants that I can use. Like, I got this Texas sage. It's purple. I've dug up a whole bunch of horrible bushes and shrubs up in front of my window and in front of my house and put some purple Texas sage up there, and it's going to thrive, and it's going to look real good. And I didn't even have to go to a nursery to buy it. It came to my house. Now, this spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code LEFT at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code LEFT at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code LEFT. Offers valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply.
He killed Peter Pan.
Okay, we'll explain that. Ramirez killed Peter Pan.
He killed a 66...
In San Francisco.
He killed a 66-year-old Asian man named Peter Pan.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You see, the problem is that no one was there to clap and, like, bring him back to life.
Yeah.
You know?
Pixie dust and things like that. That's probably would have helped him.
If the kid's last name's Pan, why call him Peter Pan? It's like someone being like the last name, like, McDonald. And then Ronald. You're like, you want to be like, oh, we should name him after our Joseph, our grandfather, but we got to name him Ronald. Fuck this kid.
Yeah, Ronald McDonald. No one's going to make fun of him.
Yeah, this kid's done. I'm so glad. Already, you don't have to worry about this kid.
During my research, I found this great article that was written in like such cheesy true crime style. And there's this one excerpt that I'd like to read from it right now describing the Peter Pan murder.
Yes, fantastic. Please.
Of course, Satan was guiding his every move. He knew that. Why fret about getting caught? All these homes. And yet not once had the resident heard him entering. The devil silenced their ears while they slept. And he, Richard Ramirez, then took it a step further. He silenced them forever. More blood to feed hell to keep its furnaces burning. Inside the house, Ramirez looked at his watch. Midnight. A good time to kill.
This is the Motley Crue blow.
Yeah, this is the thing. When do they rape the groupies?
He checked his weapon once more. Yes, cylinder loaded. These homes were all laid up pretty much the same. He knew where the bedrooms were by instinct. Without pause, he walked to where the couple slept, found them snoring, and pulled the trigger. He loved the way their bodies jerked upon impact. His senses tingled, watching them rattle in death, hearing their throats beg for air, watching as their pillows darkened with life's liquid underneath what was left of their skulls.
See, we were talking about with our friend of the show, Nicolette. She was talking about how, like, wouldn't you just wake up and run screaming out of the bed as soon as your boyfriend got shot in the head?
Yeah, you gotta think that would be a real eye-opener there. Something that would get you out. This guy jacked off to that.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Like, that's a penthouse forum, right?
Yeah.
Like,
this guy really enjoyed writing this Richard Ramirez article. It was very long.
It's not true.
He took a lot of poetic license.
Midnight.
With
and, oh, now it's time to go. He wasn't having tea at 3 p.m. every goddamn day.
Good time to kill.
I suppose it is a fine time to smoke a joint and watch a movie.
Yeah, I love that.
That's my favorite thing to do at midnight.
Yeah.
Yep. Richard Ramirez after.
But this is the kind of press. And did that come out during, well, Richard was still on his killing spree?
What do you mean?
That article.
No. This is written by some jack off on the internet.
Yeah. Way later. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. A guy named like Waverider 9499. Yeah.
But I would assume it was a similar sort of sentiment that these people were writing as far as like in the newspapers and things like that. They must have been coming up with these really grandiose ideas of what the Night Stalker was doing.
Mm. Of course.
And I'm sure that he loved every goddamn second of that.
Mostly probably just watching Price is Right and eating fucking Hot Pockets.
Yeah. Because he's just a drooling dipshit in Avias into a house with a machete.
He's a total piece of shit. Like, he would be the worst employee at the Burger King if he wasn't Richard Ramirez. Yeah.
Yeah. All the burgers got bites taken out of him.
Yeah, and he's just like, I'm a vampire.
You are fired. You are fired, Richard.
Oh, God, I wanted to be fired anyway.
Well,
See you soon. When I come back and murder you.
Do you guys think he was serious about...
Nah. Richie!
Yeah, I got Richie!
Richie! All right, so things are really heating up for the Night Stalker.
Yep, he draws a pentagram on Peter Pan's wall and writes the words, Jack the Knife.
I mean, that's just him just reaching for shit.
No, that's a Judas Priest lyric.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What the fuck is wrong with this guy?
He's having fun.
The 1980s, he took Judas Priest lyrics.
Judas Priest
to
was
heart,
the most AC/DC hardcore.
I love Judas Priest,
but at this point in time, you forget. Now we look at Judas Priest as a bunch of gay clowns. Back in the day,
I saw them live at the Masters of Metal in New Jersey, and they weren't clowning around, Henry.
No, this was
very serious.
Back in the day, Judas Priest was like the hardest band around. It's like Judas Priest and AC/DC were fucking the devil's music.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah,
it was wonderful.
Yeah, that was when it was good when you can wear a leather cap and no one said you were gay. They said that you were tough.
You were tough. That was, you remember that?
You can wear a leather ascot and like in tiny go-go boy shorts and big long boots and everyone be like, look at that tough dude.
Yeah. Well, nowadays they're like, go back to Soho.
Well, Richard returns to Los Angeles after this, and despite his face being everywhere, and in fact possibly bolstered by it, he goes for what is his last rape and murder, Bill Carnes, and the woman in this particular murder rape, I found three different names for her. Her name is either Carol Smith, Inez Erickson, or Renata Gunther.
Well, it's Gunther. It's Renata Gunther.
No, but this.
He's definitely bolstered by what's going on in the media because he breaks into these people's house. They're
engaged to be married, by the way.
Oh.
He shoots Carnes 3 times in the head, turns himself over to the woman, and he says, "You know who I am, don't you? I'm the one they're writing about in the newspapers and on the TV.
I'm the screen door intruder."
Yeah. And he forces her, he says, "I love Satan, say I love Satan," beats the fucking shit out of her, ties her up with neckties, and then sodomizes her while making her say, "I love Satan," over and over and over
again. Well, we've all done that.
And then at the end of it, and then... God damn.
We've all done it?
We've all done it.
You've done it?
Marcus has done it.
I've sodomized a woman,
there
but...
we go. Halfway there.
I hate the term sodomized.
Well, I know. It makes it sound like I did something...
A horrible crime.
Really, like a horrible
thing. Like you're
thing.
Richard Ramirez.
No, I have sodomized a few women.
The only... Of
and
it's course.
That makes me sound like I'm a horrible person.
You're not a horrible person.
It was all consensual.
Yeah.
Well, they loved every second of it. I'm sure you were a very attractive... You're a very attractive lover to these gals.
Very gentle, Ben.
I'm
yeah,
sure.
He's good. Yeah. He's been in a loving relationship for a number of years now.
That's yes. what some would say.
It takes love.
That's good. But it is funny. Marcus and I were talking. If you look at the rap sheet, it's rape, and then it's like sodomy, oral copulation, mm-hmm. and murder. And sodomy and oral copulation should not be illegal.
No, those are not crimes.
It's
those
the
are
rape
activities.
And the murder. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it is kind of bizarre that I would say... that you can make an argument that 2 out of those 4 crimes that he supposedly committed, he should
yeah,
have
they're
been
not
charged
proof
with.
For, so this is so this happened. He got away with this. When what was the buildup that they got?
Did he
identify?
This
him?
Right here.
Did yeah. he kill this woman?
He yes. did not kill her.
Oh, okay.
No, he didn't. She just killed the man. He walked as he was walking out of the house. He found $400, and he says, "You know, this is all that saved you. This is all your life is worth." He said, "I would have killed you if you didn't have the money." And then he says, "Tell him the Night Stalker was here." And she said, "I will." He said, "Say I love Satan." And she said, "I love Satan."
Like
he,
it's Cheers?
Yeah.
Yeah, just your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. What say is you, happening?
Say you love Satan. And then gets it, laughs and then leaves.
So,
well, see you around. It's been fun.
It's interesting that he didn't kill this woman. Again, going back, almost harking back to Zodiac, you know, where he went on that huge dry spell for so long because the media was there just like talking about who he was.
No, he loved it. What, he was building. But, he I mean, loved it.
I know. I mean, but the Zodiac, I don't think he had to go and kill so much because he was getting the satisfaction from the media. He was getting all the fame, right?
Yeah.
So do you think that Ramirez at this time was almost content with his position in serial killer lore?
Maybe. I mean, no, I mean, I
well,
don't.
I mean, he did take a vacation right after this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is really, it's interesting. And of course, his story lived on.
Yeah. Well, what happened as far as him getting recognized is that the neighbors heard the screams, in particular, one 13-year-old boy named James Romero III.
Oh.
He noticed an orange station wagon pulling away, an orange Toyota station wagon, which Richard Ramirez had
that was
stolen.
His current vehicle.
Yeah, it was his yeah. current vehicle. And the kid had the wherewithal to write down the license plate
wow.
number. And, of course, the woman survived, and I take it back, the man survived, too. He got shot 3 times in the face. You got to remember, Richard Ramirez is using real pussy guns here.
Yeah. A 22? I thought a 22 was a good...
No, it's
no,
not.
No. 22 is a real piece of shit gun. Small
okay.
bullet.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. It doesn't have much stopping power. He shot multiple people in the face, and they have survived.
And they survived.
Yeah.
But then again, it's just not about that, really. Yeah. It's about the other thing. It's about the conquering and then leaving.
That's right. And a good chef doesn't blame his knife, or a bad chef. You know, it's like you can't blame your
knife.
I
mean, he'd be mad if you got a bad knife.
Well, nobody can still be a good chef.
That's chefs and serial killers. It's different. You know?
Well, I mean, we're talking about butchering.
Yeah.
But yeah. Well, I mean, no, a good carpenter doesn't blame his
tools.
Yeah.
And after this murder is when Richard Ramirez goes out of town. He goes to visit his brother out in Arizona. But while he's gone, the net just fucking comes down on him completely.
Yeah, because then they get the because then they pulled a print.
Yeah, they found the car. He had immediately abandoned the car, and they pulled a print from the car, and they were able to match that to the testimony from a middle-aged woman named Donna Myers. She owned a rundown little hotel down in...
yeah, where he had been staying, in Skid Row.
Yeah.
You make it sound like a prostitute den the way you said hotel there.
It was a prostitute den.
Oh, it was?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, and he constantly talked to her about
Satanism and the black arts and all kinds of shit. And in fact, one time they were, she was watching the TV and there was a report about the Night Stalker out, and he walked up behind her and said, "Now, wouldn't you be surprised if I turned out to be the stalker?"
Oh, he's just having fun now.
And she was like, "Absolutely not."
Yeah, no, actually, you're like my top two people, I think it is.
Yep. I was wishing it was my husband so I could fucking turn him in, get rid of him. But
so they start, you know, she calls them about that, says his name was Richard. The fingerprints starting to come in. And then once they get, because of course he's been arrested multiple times, as soon as the fingerprint comes back, boom, it's Richard Ramirez, drifter out of Texas. His fucking face is absolutely everywhere, and he has no idea because he's still out in Arizona.
And it's so funny. Before he went Facebook.
He like literally went to go hang out, and then he came back from vacation and be like, "All right, back to work, cleared my head." Yeah. And then, so are we ready to get into the final story?
Oh, yeah.
It's so fucking awesome. He walked into, so apparently he got back into L.A. He's back from vacation. You know how it is when you're back to the grind. It's kind of upsetting.
It's stressful. Yeah, it's kind of sad.
He goes in and he was probably talking,
I enjoyed vacation, but, you know, I'm almost tired from vacation. I need a vacation from vacation.
Yeah, of course. So he went to a store and he was like, apparently he's like walking on the street. He's like, "People were staring at me as I was walking down the street. People were staring at me." And he was like, "Why are people looking at me?" And then he walked into the store, he gets something, and he looks at the newspaper, and the newspaper has got a full color photo of him right on the fucking cover. And then he looks, and then people start going, "El Matador, El Matador, El Matador," which means the killer.
Okay.
And he sees it, and he fucking takes off. And what's really interesting is that the woman that when we brought up in the first episode was talking about how, like, when Ricky used to poke her in the back in the pencil.
That's right.
She was like talking about how they used to play kick the can together, and like the Richie was always the feistiest runner in the neighborhood. And so there's this weird parallel to when he was this kid, where he was this bright, sprightly, like sports playing kid. He takes off through the neighborhood, and then the police lines start blowing up. He's like, "There's a dude running through my backyard. There's a dude, like, he's hopping fences. He's running through the neighborhood. People are chasing him down the street." And basically, he gets beaten by a mob. A mob chases him through Los Angeles, and they beat the shit out of him. One had a flagpole. Someone took a flagpole from off an American flag and beat him. He was covered in blood, and basically two dudes fucking stood on him. And they were like, and called the cops, and they fucking came and got him. It was like Frankenstein.
Yeah. It really is. Yeah. It was a pitchfork type situation.
They had to, though. But this is what we were saying, where it's like L.A. worked together and got him. The neighborhoods got him.
What a bizarre feeling.
It was like the end of Machete.
Yes. Yeah. Great movie starring Danny Trejo.
It's a wonderful movie. When he was arrested, he told a cop, "I want the electric chair. They should have shot me on the street. I did it, you know. You guys got me, the Night Stalker. Hey, let me have a gun to play Russian roulette. I'd rather die than spend the rest of my life in prison."
Yep, absolutely. So, and then he went to jail, and then began his super sensational trial.
You know, the trial lasted 4 years. It cost the state over $2 million in legal costs.
Why did it last so long?
Because the defense attorneys kept giving him the runaround. First of all, he had half a dozen attorneys. He kept firing attorneys and bringing them in. They kept trying to find every single loophole in the system.
But he would have the pentagrams drawn in his hands and doing the thing. And he was doing he was just doing like off-the-cuff interviews with people talking about Satan.
Yeah, and he kept yelling "Hail Satan" in the middle of the trials. They interviewed 3,000 potential jurors to finally get down to 12.
Like, because everybody would be
how do you do it? Yeah.
Yeah, how do you do it? Yeah. It ended up being 6 Hispanic, 6 black jurors that were on the trial for Richard Ramirez. There was one juror. It was kind of a funny story. There was one juror.
Well, there's just one of many. You know, this is just it's a laugh a second.
One juror, there was this rumor that Richard Ramirez was trying to smuggle a gun in. Someone was going to give him a gun.
Because he wanted to shoot the prosecuting attorney.
Yeah, he wanted to shoot the prosecuting attorney.
He did?
Yeah, it's
Richard
weird.
Richard wanted
was
to
mad.
Shoot the prosecuting attorney. I can't believe it.
There was this big rumor, and one day, one of the jurors didn't show up. They went over to her house, and she was shot dead.
Yeah, she was shot dead. So everyone was like, "Oh my God, he's like broke out of jail, he's going to do it." But then it turns out she was shot dead for a domestic dispute.
Yeah, her husband shot her.
Yeah. Okay, but let me just say that Marcus did preface this with, "This is a funny story."
Yes, you did.
But then it did end up with another woman dead.
I didn't say, I didn't mean ha-ha funny. I meant funny old world. Yeah.
Don't you think? It's like this song, Ironic.
Are we going to be allowed to be around our grandkids? Is that? I'm concerned.
There were over 100 witnesses in the trial. So many eyewitnesses, people that saw him here, people that saw him there, everywhere. Here's the impact they said the media had on Richard. This is from a book by Philip Carlo.
And this is to me, it's really fascinating.
Yeah, it says, for the first time, he realized that to people like him, people of the night, he was a hero. He was somebody. He liked that. For his whole life, he'd been a tall, lanky nobody, just another angry-eyed, hungry face in a hungry crowd. But now people stopped. People paid attention, stared, and pointed. He figured no matter what he did, they were going to convict him and kill him, so he decided to take control.
But we talk about this all the time with serial killers. In America, we have this weird sort of, like, they really believe that there's like a personal timeline that you reach this point in your life, you should have a family, you should have XYZ, you should have a job, you should have this level of success. We now are in this place now where, especially in these times, and like in 2014, that people want that validation from people they don't know. They want to be famous. Yes. Everybody wants it. And this is just a perfect example of just somebody who, like, he was a misfit. He wasn't good. All these guys, every serial killer, they're always like, they're not good at anything. They can't make personal relationships. They're monsters. They don't know what to do. They can't make their way in America, so they're like, well, you know what, I can be a fucking super killer.
I'll get my face on the cover of the whatever LA Times, any which way possible,
and
I
a
can.
Big scary, and then I go means, from a frail little piece of shit kid to the scariest motherfucker in LA.
I'll get on MTV. I can't sing. Well, I'll get impregnated because I'm 15 and a half.
Yeah,
you know,
and then I'll be on VH1. And, you know,
it is a very similar thing, and that's a good point. And it's really fascinating. You wonder if there was the reality show outlet for Richard Ramirez.
Oh my God.
Would he just be the next or the latest pickup artist?
Yeah.
You know,
it's
would
like
he
Bachelor,
have like.
The, but with the Night Stalker, and it's him in a concrete like cube.
Would he
and
be they have Chris to keep, Angel?
He like gives the rose through the cube, like the cube bars.
Yeah.
And then they come in and he's like grabbing their hands whenever they get close to him, and then they pull away and be like, I understand, Richie. Nobody else does. I can't
That's
wait
right.
to get some one on one time with him.
He definitely.
Oh my God! He ate my breasts.
Oh wow! And what a good meal they were. It is weird. It is the time. You could argue that he did do exactly what society sort of wanted him to do.
I mean,
after they start feeding the dialogue, after they start making the storyline, he did just fill an outline.
That
right?
was the argument he made to himself. Was that that's how you validate it? Be like, they wanted this out of me.
Mm-hmm. Let's hear what he has. Let's hear what he has to say about exactly that.
People in this day and age are brainwashed and programmed like a computer at being nothing more than puppets. This nation, this country is founded in violence. Violent delights tend to have violent ends. It's madness is something rare in individuals, but in groups, people, and ages, it is a rule. Killing is killing, whether done for duty, profit, or fun. Men murdered themselves into this democracy.
You're good at reading your script, Richard, but you're not much at answering my direct questions. A lot was made that you're a devil worshiper. Do you worship the devil? Have you ever studied Satanism?
There are different sects of Satanism.
Have you just yes or no? Have you studied Satanism?
Yes, I have.
Are you a worshiper of the devil?
No comment.
Come on, Richard.
I can tell you a little bit about Satanism.
Well, I'm interested in hearing what you got to say, then.
It is undefiled wisdom instead of hypocritical self-deceit. It is power without charity. A Satanist admits to being evil.
Do you admit to being evil, Richard?
We are all evil in some form or another, are we not?
I'm asking you the questions, my friend.
And he's kind of hot. You know, you were talking about he's
kind of
dreamy.
Yes, I am evil. Not 100%, but I am evil. Evil has always existed. The perfect world most people seek shall never come to pass. And it's going to get worse. The great epochs of our life is when we gain the courage to rebaptize our evil qualities as being our best qualities.
He kind of sounds like the Native American from Wayne's World 2.
He does. <Yeah. laughs> He really does. That's great.
Yeah, no, but he did it. He lived for something technically bigger than himself. What he said, you know, like he said that was a part of that was how he validated it as well. And then he went on to get married in jail.
He got married in jail to a woman.
Yeah, had a great time during the trial. He laughed his way through the entire thing.
Absolutely.
When a woman was describing being raped next to her dead husband's body, he cackled.
Right.
Like, as loud as he possibly could.
And now he's also playing the part of the black hat. Yeah. You know what I mean?
That's I think that he did think it was very funny.
Yes, of course. Yeah, because he did it. And then, you know, but then he went on to die in jail.
At 54
cancer,
years old, you know? Leukemia. And yeah.
But he was, that was a true fucking monster. That's a true American monster. He's the scariest one that, I think it's the scariest one we've researched so far.
It's important. So again, what have the lessons been? If you're in a fight with your couple, don't have one person sleep on the couch.
Yeah, yeah.
Sleep in the bed together. Say you love each other.
Yeah.
Keep your door shut.
Fuck's sake.
Yeah.
You know,
lock
get a
it.
Gun. I guess. I don't know. You
or have a knife by your bed.
I have a knife. I have like a, I have a stick that I use.
Well, you're repulsive. No one wants to
break
into your house.
I use it also to put a rag on it, and I fucking scratch my ass with it.
Yeah, that would work.
So it's got a twofold purpose. Yeah, I don't know, man.
Just be careful of people with beautiful hair.
This is a dude who is, looking into his eyes is like looking to the eyes of like the real devil. He was a real monster.
He was a beast,
and great
a dumb
for comedy.
Human being. Great for comedy. That's why we do it. Thank you guys so much for listening. And that's I guess this concludes our two-parter.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Join the Facebook page.
That's right.
I'm going to be in L.A. So
you'll be Skyping in.
I'll be Skyping in from here and out for the next 2 months. If you're in L.A. And you got a line on free burritos, let me know.
Let him
know.
That.
Yeah.
Keep Henry happy when he's out there. Of course, Henry loves you. That's his at Twitter, Marcus Parks. And then I'm Ben Kissel. And I guess
Hail
that's
Satan
it.
To
we got
everyone.
Roundtable and Top Hat. Yeah. Listen to those shows too. And of course, watch your pre-faces going to hell.
Which you eventually come out with new episodes.
Which will be very, very exciting.
Absolutely.
There was a fellow, it was funny. There was a fellow who posted that in advertisement on the Facebook page. And then somebody wrote, is it worth watching? for those that don't know, Henry is the star of your pre-faces going to hell. And I assure you, it is worth watching. And if you don't like Henry, you'll love it because he gets urinated on in the first episode.
Yeah, tortured. It's great.
Which is really very perfect. So hail yourselves, everybody.
Hail me!
Hail Gein.
Me gusta leche.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
If only they could have crept a little louder.
What's that? A louder poop would have helped?
No, like crapped.
Yeah, crap.
Oh, clapped. I see. Crap. I thought you said crapped.
He did.
He did, technically.
Oh, I That's see. I'm an idiot. Yeah. I'm wrong. I'm sorry.
You misunderstood the character.
I'm sorry.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.